Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Welcome to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. Today we have Luke with us, and we are so excited to hear your journey. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation from you and from the doctor.
Well, thank
you. Honored to be here.
Well, pleasure is all ours. You know, we're all here to try to help people that are out there that have gone through the journey or that are going through the journey, and they just need guidance, they need hope. And it's so great to hear from people that have been there so that they know that there's a solution, and just to hang in there a little bit more and push a little bit harder, and they'll get there.
Yeah, well said. Yes. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how did it all start for you? I mean, where were we at, and how old were you, and what was going on?
Yeah, fascinating story. I was a graduate student at the time studying Chinese medicine. I was studying at Southern California University of Health Sciences in Whittier, California. And I was riding my mountain bike in the Santa Monica Mountains. It was Memorial Weekend of 2004, so beginning of the summer. You know, there were some real metaphysical lessons about this, spiritual lessons that I'll get into about, you know, my mindset of what was happening in my life at the time. There were really deep lessons that came through that I'd love to share. But I was on this very rigorous mountain bike ride from Venice, California, up into the Santa Monica Mountains. And I remember on my ride, I just reached the summit, and there was a herd of deer. They were kind of scraggly looking. They didn't look very healthy. And I noted that. I thought, that's kind of interesting. And so then I turned around and I descended on my bike back down to the beach. And when I got to the beach, I took off my windbreaker, and I had a tick right on my bicep, actually right at the acupuncture point, heart two.
Oh.
Or actually, it's a heart three. It's heart two. And I came from a state where we really didn't have any ticks. I don't think I ever had a tick on my life, on my body before that. And I didn't know the proper protocol for removing the tick. And so I just reacted with my animal brain, and I just grabbed it with my fingers and I pulled it off and I threw it away. And I got back on my bike and I rode home. And within a few days, I started feeling really sick. I started getting sharp stabbing joint pain. Just started in my fingers and my elbows. And within a few days, it felt like someone was putting an ice pick into my joints, you know, in the back of my neck with the occipital junction. And at the time, I was working part-time. I had three different part-time jobs to live as an acupuncture student in Southern California. And so I worked for a functional medicine practice as an entry-level functional medicine nutritionist. I worked in an osteopathic office as an office assistant. And I worked at a Chinese herbal apothecary in downtown Santa Monica as someone who made the herbal formulas. And so I went to one of my employers.
Which store was that? Because I had my practice in Santa Monica for many, many years. I left back in 01.
Beautiful. I worked at a facility called Herb King, which was on Main Street in Santa Monica, which later became a medical cannabis dispensary. But at the time, it was a traditional Chinese medicine facility where they manufactured and sold a variety of different herbal products for practitioners and for the general public as well.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I was on 6th Street right in between Colorado and Broadway. That's where I had my practice.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, very nice. Yeah.
Small
another
world.
Santa Monica alumni.
Yeah, small
world.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember I went home, and I was at home at the time, and I knew something bad was happening. And I was maybe 3 or 4 days into it. I knew that it was some kind of acute infection. And so I was looking through Tabor's Medical Dictionary, I'll never forget. And I opened it to the page of Lyme disease, and there it was, the bullseye rash, exactly what I had on my arm. And I just had this sinking, sick feeling in my stomach. I'm like, oh boy, this doesn't look good. And I was reading through, and I had heard of Lyme disease, but I didn't really know anything about it at that time. And that was the start of the journey. And it was a wild ride. It took a while to regain my health.
So with you, so you had the bullseye rash, which a lot of us don't get, and I had it too, and I didn't know what the heck it meant. I thought Lyme disease was for dogs. Didn't have a clue. So, you know, and that's one of the reasons we do these podcasts is let's educate people along with giving them that hope. So I'm sorry you didn't know what that meant. We know what it means now, and we're going to tell everybody we can.
That's right. Yeah.
And so what, I mean, because here you have a lot of the kind of integrative background. Yeah, you're functioning in that space, Chinese medicine, acupuncture, functional medicine. So how did you, now you find out, oh, I got Lyme disease. That's what I'm dealing with. So how did you pursue that? Did you go the medical route with antibiotics, or what did you do?
Yes, that's right. So remember, I was a brand new student. I was about 30 years old at the time. But I was really fresh out of my undergraduate studies in biology and chemistry and nutrition. And I knew I wanted to study Chinese medicine. I'd been interested in it for a long time, but I didn't really understand its true power. And I didn't understand that it had the ability to treat this. So I really just resorted to the cultural programming that I knew from my childhood and early adult life, which was go talk to a medical doctor. And I was working for two different medical offices. So I went to the one that was most accessible. He was an osteopath. And I showed him the rash and he said, oh, that looks like Lyme disease. And he didn't know that much about it either. He was not a Lyme literate medical doctor. He pulled out his reference and the reference said, doxycycline is the prescription, 500 milligrams, 30 days. And he wrote me the prescription. And within 24 hours, I was taking doxycycline. And I had the classic Herxheimer reaction. I mean, it put me on my back. I mean, I was sick as a dog for like 3 days. You know, the first day or two, I don't think I got out of bed. And slowly it got better. And over the course of that series of antibiotics or that course of antibiotics, the symptoms all went away. And I thought, hey, great. Western medicine solved the problem. And I went on my merry way. And so that was at the beginning of the summer. And 3 months went by. And then at the end of the summer, the symptoms started to recur. I started getting those same sharp stabbing joint pains again, fatigue, brain fog. And so I went back to my employer, the same osteopath. And I said, I think something's happening here. I don't feel right. So he wrote me another prescription. Same thing, doxycycline, 500 milligrams, 30 days. And I started taking it. And the only thing that happened is that my gut just was wrecked. You know, my loose stool and terrible digestion, gut pain. And the symptoms didn't get any better. In fact, they were getting worse rapidly. So, but then I was also working in another facility that was functional medicine doctors. They were two very, well-esteemed functional medicine doctors, but still California didn't have that much Lyme disease at the time. It was primarily an East Coast phenomenon, even though the cases were growing rapidly in Southern California at the time, there was not a high degree of Lyme literacy. So I went to the other doctors this time and I said, well, what would you do in this case? And they said, well, the next stage in Western therapy is IV antibiotics. And I said, we have a prescription for you if you want it. And it was for an IV of a cephalosporin antibiotic, some ceftriaxone or cetin or one of those. And I thought about it and I did the research and I found that the rate of treatment success was very low. And that there were these crazy side effects that it can actually eat away the tissue where the IV is placed, and that you can actually get gallstones that are made up of the drug because the body doesn't detoxify those drugs at all. They just crystallize in the biliary tree. And so I looked at that safety profile and I said, I don't think this is for me. I think I need to find a way to treat this with the medicine that I'm actually studying, Chinese medicine. So
a smart move. Yeah, you're going to give all these other new problems to your problem from taking that antibiotic. Crazy.
That's right. And at the time, my employers were like, well, we've never seen anybody, we haven't seen that many cases, but we've never seen anybody treat it successfully with that many things, and especially not with herbs. But, do what you need to do. So at that point, I reported to the student clinic at the school where I was attending at the time. And that at that time, it was a fairly new acupuncture program. And most of the instructors were fairly recent immigrants from China. And most, if not all of them, were were highly esteemed practitioners, and most of them had their MDs from China. Some of them also had their MDs in the United States, but there's not a lot of Lyme disease in China. Maybe there is now, but at the time there was not a lot of current information about the treatment of Lyme disease in Chinese medicine. But they all knew about leptospirosis, and leptospirosis is another spirochete, and that is a common insect-borne pathogen in China. And so they started kind of pointing me in that direction, like, look at those protocols, you know, study that body of evidence, and you know, those will give you some ideas about the right direction to go. So I started doing that, and the treatment was not really going anywhere. I was treating some of the effects. I was getting better with the fatigue, and some of the things were improving, but I was still having the sharp stabbing joint pains, and it seemed like other things like the brain fog were really going in the wrong direction rapidly.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Chinese medicine really, yeah, that it is more of a Western phenomenon, this Lyme disease. And but I would assume that with a Chinese medicine, you would still be able to kind of assess and see what is thrown out of balance. You know, what do we need? You know, do we need to support the spleen, you know, meridian? Do we need? I mean, so it, did an assessment like that take place then? And that's what you kind of leaned into, or?
Yes, that's correct. So you're absolutely correct. Chinese medicine is based on this idea of harmony between the organs. And so a state of health is seen as the state when your organs are all working in harmony together and the energy is flowing smoothly through the meridians and the qi and blood can perfuse evenly throughout the body. And disease is then, as you alluded to, is a state where the organs are thrown out of balance. So we could see that I was having significant issues in my spleen and stomach energy, the digestive energy, in my heart and pericardium. I was getting petechia. I was getting you know, like almost like blood blisters under the surface of my skin along the pericardium meridian on my wrists. That was a sign of inflammation in the pericardium. So I knew that was pretty serious.
Interesting.
And at that point, I was just really reaching out for answers. I mean, just diving into the medical literature, reading all that I could, reading books on it, reaching out to Lyme literate physicians. And I have to say, the vast majority of experts I reached out to, and I explained it, oh, I'm a grad student. I don't have much money at all. I'm basically self-treating here. Can you point me in the right direction? And the people that I reached out to were very generous with their time. And I'm eternally grateful for that.
Oh, I love hearing that. Yeah, because it's hard to find somebody to help you. And you know, it can be very expensive to treat Lyme disease. So I love to hear that there's people out there that, you know, go that extra mile for us. So then yeah. Where did things turn to?
Yeah, so that fall, that was the fall of 2004, I just continued to deteriorate. I remember my parents came out to visit me for Thanksgiving. And I think that was the low point, because I remember just kind of breaking down. Here I was an adult male, and I wasn't really from a culture of very emotionally expressive people. And my parents got there, and I just broke down into tears and just, you know, like, my parents didn't know anything about Lyme disease. They just knew I was sick. They knew I was losing weight, that I was having trouble concentrating, that I was missing work, I was missing school. So,
it's definitely a sign that something was wrong with you. Yeah.
Oh, most definitely. All the signs were there. So I just started asking around. I started asking other people in the field, and I was referred to the Emperor's College Student Clinic, which is another Chinese medicine school. There are five schools of Chinese medicine in the greater Los Angeles area.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so Emperor's College is one of the most well-regarded schools in the country. It's more expensive and also really focused on a different style of Chinese medicine, a more diverse style of Chinese medicine than the school that I was studying. Okay. And so I went up there and I met the clinic director, and he was a man named Will Morris. He's retired now. He lives in Canada. But at the time he was the clinic director, and he had some experience with Lyme, and he sat down with me and went over my case, and he gave me a couple of herbal prescriptions and talked to me about some specific herbs, herbs outside of Chinese medicine, you know, cat's claw. And you know, he was very familiar with it. He had treated patients. So he sort of set me on a path.
You found the right person, it sounds like.
I found the right person. And so then what I did is I actually transferred to that school, because I felt that much more, it was closer to home. And it was also, the culture was just a better fit. And so it was a much more established school of Chinese medicine. So I transferred there. I did take a semester off for health reasons.
Right.
But and during that time,
it's funny how our journey sometimes will lead us down different paths that we didn't know. So you never would have learned that, you know, this school may have been better for you had you not gotten sick. So it's just crazy how things in this world work, right?
You've hit the nail on the head. That's absolutely right. You know, and I tell people that I would never wish Lyme disease on anyone, but it was the greatest learning experience that I've ever had, Tanya. I have to say, it really taught me so many things. It taught me the power of Chinese medicine and herbs. It taught me the power of mindset. I mean, I really had to come at this as I felt like I was losing my life. I felt like my vitality was slipping away from me. You know, I was doing functional medicine, so I was watching my hormone levels crash. I was watching my testosterone levels crash. My platelet levels were fluctuating up and down, you know, these wild fluctuations in platelets. That's why I was getting the petechia, the bruising on my skin. My platelets were crashing at one point. And so it, to me, felt like a life or death battle. And yeah. I felt like I had to put everything that I had into solving the problem.
Yeah, but you sound exactly like me when I went through my journey. Yeah. It was, you know, at one point I was ready to take my own life, because the doctors kept telling me nothing was wrong with me. It was all in my head. Mm-hmm. And then at another point I thought, no, I'm not ready to go, you know, and you just have to, I had to get rid of the life that I knew. And my number one focus was figuring out what was wrong with me and then getting better. So I can completely relate to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So you were doing these Chinese medicines, and then they were throwing in, like you mentioned earlier, cat's claws and stuff. So what other supplements that do you recall that they incorporated into your treatment plan?
Oh, gosh. Well, my treatment was mostly self-directed. I was taking the advice of many people that I respected, and I was asking lots of questions, but I was kind of adding and subtracting things. And so what I came to, based on advice from my supervisors and other clinicians, and mostly Chinese medicine, but a few others as well, as I came up with a kind of a three-tiered approach. And so on one side, I was using a Chinese herbal formula that I called my support formula. Okay. And that would change, that was based on my symptoms. So if my digestion was particularly off, that formula would be completely focused on helping my digestion.
Okay.
And then there was a second formula that we called the killers. And that formula was composed of 6 to 12 different, primarily Chinese herbs, but also things like cat's claw and a few other, you know, Ayurvedic herbs and things like that. But all in that sort of class of herbs that would be antimicrobial, antiviral, antiparasitic, antifungal. And there's a lot of crossover. It was really kind of a shotgun effect.
Right.
And that formula was its only purpose was to kill bacteria.
Okay.
And then the third tier was the functional medicine side. And then that was to address anything that we found in my blood work, blood and urine and other labs and other things that were not being addressed by the first two formulas.
Okay. So let me recap this. So we got the first was whatever your symptoms were. You were basing that on, that was kind of to get that up and going.
Right.
And then your second tier was kill everything. Mm-hmm. And then the third was going off of your labs or, you know, whatever type of tests that you did and
that's right.
Going at it that way. I really like that. That's a simple way to kind of break it down. So great that you came up with such a thing.
Mm-hmm. And so the real advantage of that was that if I was feeling strong, then I could really go after it with the killer formula. I could really up the dose of that. I could take, you know, 10, 12, 15 grams of that a day. And if I was feeling bad and I was feeling a lot of Herxheimer reaction, I was feeling like I was really detoxing, like, man, I really need to slow down. I would titrate that dose down and I would take more of the support formulas, you know, adaptogens, rhodiola rosea was a really important herb for my energy at that time. Mm-hmm. But I was using things like Bacopa monnieri for brain support, you know, ginkgo biloba. I was taking magnesium for magnesium deficiency that had been detected in my blood, D3, you know, all the things that we think of now, most people who are in this space are very familiar with these. But for me, this was a pretty profound education because I was seeing patients during the day as a functional medicine nutritionist, but I was really, as a junior practitioner, my job was really just to help people with dosing and to, you know, get their products for them and answer any questions that they might have about, you know, should they take their food with, take the products with food or not.
Okay.
So, I was really receiving at that point a real-time education in how to address a very serious, potentially chronic health problem with these modalities.
Yeah. Wow. That your story is giving me goosebumps because it just really, like you had the idea, you had the thought, you're in school, you get this horrible disease. Mm-hmm. You reach out to, you know, your mentors that graciously, you know, gave you their guidance, which is amazing. And then you kind of just took it on yourself to create this little plan to how you're going to eradicate this, what's going on with you. And then it, you know, kind of changes you and you get, you're still in the Chinese medicine, but you're venturing out a little bit more into the different supplements and learning stuff about that. So that's incredible. That it really, Lyme is life changing. It just is.
It sure is.
Some people for the good, some people for the bad, but I like to have lessons like this be for the good. And my life
for
is
sure.
very different, but I have no, and it's not in a bad way. It just, my life, the Lyme disease led my life in a different direction. And that's good.
Yeah.
You know, educating and advocating for Lyme, like that is my mission. And you, I mean, I'm sure that this is just going to help you with so many aspects of your life moving forward. So, wow. So how long were you doing this kind of three-tier thing and your ups and downs and what type of detoxing did you do?
Yeah, great questions. So at this time, as you can intuit, I was really in the mode of I'll try anything. I will experiment.
We get desperate.
I mean, one of my clinical supervisors, he said, you know, and he took me aside, you know, he knew what I was working with. And he said, you might want to experiment with urine therapy. And he told me a little bit about it. So, you know, there was a time period where I experimented. I would drink a few drops of my own urine and I'm like, I don't, that didn't last very long.
Okay.
I gave it a try. I didn't notice any big difference from it.
Okay.
Some other people might. I was experimenting with raw food protocols because the thinking at the time was, well, you need enzymes. So I embarked on a fairly stringent raw food protocol, mostly raw vegan, but I was consuming some raw meat, some raw dairy at intervals, just when my body felt like it needed additional nourishment, just listening to my body, just being very, very intuitive. And it was kind of a bumpy ride. It took about 18 months to completely clear the infection. I had a couple relapses and they really scared me. So what would happen is I would take this three-tiered protocol until I didn't have any symptoms and I would keep taking it for a while longer, another couple of weeks and then no symptoms. I'm like, okay, great. Am I in the clear? Kind of looking around, like waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right.
And at first, you know, I would go a couple of weeks and then I would have a relapse and then I would start again. I would just hit it hard. I would do it, go back in. And I have to say also, you know, my part-time job at this store called Herb King, which is no longer in existence, they were very gracious with me. They gave me a below wholesale discount on all of the herbal products that I needed, and I was sourcing them all from there.
Certainly helpful, right?
It was so helpful because I was a graduate student. I didn't have a huge income and I was living in a very expensive city to live in. And so, you know, at one point, even buying things wholesale, I was spending, you know, $300 or $400 or $500 a month on herbs. That would be the equivalent if that was at retail of more than $1,000 a month of herbal supplements. And so without their help and their support, I don't, you know, who knows? I think I would be a completely different person.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you know, like I said, I just think you were in the right place. You know, you were where you needed to be to get that extra help that you needed. So, so were you doing any, What were you doing if you were herxing really bad? So I know you said you just kind of back off on the killing stuff. Did you do any types of saunas or coffee enemas or any type of detoxing like that?
So at that time, I wasn't as familiar with those things. And instituted those things now with protocols with my patients. And I have a sauna at home now. I'm an ardent user. In fact, after our podcast, I'll be getting in the sauna for a little while.
Perfect.
But at the time, I didn't have access to a lot of those things. So okay. I was primarily practicing Qigong. I would go to the beach and do Qigong and, you know, the dawn and sunset, which is believed to be the time when there's most energy to work with okay. Qigong. And, you know, the raw food, I was a little bit of fasting. I would do some fasts at that time.
Fasting's incredible too. Very, mm-hmm. very helpful to the body.
Yeah. You know, I was experimenting with some detoxification products, you know, more on the functional medicine side, you know, using things like binders, you know, using
yes.
bentonite clay, activated charcoal, things like that. I experimented with many different things at that time. And I think they all helped, and they helped to give me a fluency in how these things can work and when you would use them. A big thing for me is that when I had the active infection, at the time I had 5 mercury amalgam fillings in my mouth. Okay. And you know, being a health-minded person, I was fairly conscious about oral hygiene. And I noticed that my fillings all developed this, they were shiny before, shiny, you know, mercury, silver amalgam fillings. And during the active infection, they got this dark gray, dull haze on them. And doing my research, I found that the Lyme pathogen can pick up heavy metals.
Interesting.
And so, yeah. So I had a heavy metals test, and sure enough, we found out that I had mercury toxicity. So I had to go through that protocol. So then I was using these different algae products, and I was using chlorella and spirulina and cilantro, and experimented with a few other things to help bind with the mercury. I had to get my amalgams out first, and that right. took some time.
Yeah, not an easy process, and not a cheap process. Yeah,
it was expensive. Yeah. And so when I first started to have long stretches of symptom free, I was always really nervous that I was going to have a relapse, and I had a few. And actually, one of them turned out to be really interesting in that I went to a baby shower. One of my classmates had a baby, and they had cigars there. And I had used nicotine as a young person, but had stopped using nicotine, you know, in my quest to be a healthy, you know, I was a health practitioner, an aspiring right. one. So nicotine didn't really fit in, but I had a cigar, and it created a relapse.
Really? And like so immediately
immediately, like within 24 hours, I'd been symptom free for at least a couple of weeks, and I was off of my herbs. And I thought, you know, this is another time, like, I thought, am I in the clear? And immediately I'd smoked a cigar at a baby blessing, you know, outside in somebody's backyard, immediately started to feel sick. And within a few days was having a relapse. And I was really afraid of that. But then what occurred to me one day is that if now that I know that I have something that has a relapse, let me back up a step and really describe something in Chinese medicine that I think is really relevant. And that is this concept of latency. And there is this concept in Western medicine, but it's really not very emphasized. But we're seeing a lot of it now with the pandemic and with the fallout from the pandemic and the vaccine, and that many people that have old illnesses, you know, Epstein-Barr virus, shingles, HSV-1, HSV-2, these things are often resurfacing mm-hmm. after COVID or after the vaccine or both. And that is because they're being taken out of latency. And Chinese medicine has a very well-established tradition and kind of a conversation, cultural conversation around what latency means. And so what I realized at that point, I'm, you know, also talking to my professors about this, is that what's happening is I'm not completely getting rid of the pathogen, but I'm just pushing it into latency.
Yes.
And their understanding is that the body, the reason why we get joint pains, and this happens not just with Lyme, but with, you know, with a common cold or a flu, people often get achy joints. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese medicine theory there is what happens is the body is shunting the pathogen into the joint spaces because the joint spaces are not very vascular. They're surrounded by connective tissue. And if you've ever seen like a laparoscopic photo, if they do surgery on someone and they put a camera inside someone's knee, there's hardly any blood vessels in there. It's mostly just white connective tissue right. with some fluid. And so the idea is that the body is shoving everything in there because it's having trouble dealing with it. And it's almost like a firewall. And so it's just pushing everything in there so it can sort of hold it that. So my thought with the tobacco and nicotine was that it's somehow pulling things out of latency. And it occurred to me that I could use that. And so what I did is that I would I would try to use tobacco in a very ceremonial way, and I would very intentionally consume a small amount of nicotine, and it would pull the pathogen out of latency. And then I would really hit it with the herbs again. And I kept doing that until the nicotine no longer created a relapse. And the last time that happened was I don't remember exactly, but I want to say around 2007. So really it took about 3 years. It took 18 months for me to really feel good again. And I lost weight. I lost, I think 10 pounds of at least of, and I was not a very, you know, I was maybe 140 pounds at times. I was very skinny, you know, a lot of muscle wasting occurred and my digestion was wrecked. And so the next 18 months was just really rebuilding my body and then kind of dealing with these flare-ups that would happen from time to time. And, you know, knock on wood, it's been a long time. It's been, you know, 15 years now, and
well,
I've never had a relapse.
I mean, that is just so interesting that, you know, well, and they talk a lot too, like these Lyme literate doctors about, well, and we just know in general that I think that the Lyme, the spirochetes can hide behind the biofilms. And that's why, you know, antibiotics, I don't always think is a great route because it's just going to push them back in there further. Kind of like what you were saying. And then the tobacco was opening that up. That is such an interesting concept, but you know, it makes sense. Like it makes perfect sense. And we know that because now it worked for you.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So that part of it was a couple year journey about figuring out when it was all gone.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Wow. And so it's been, you said 7 years?
No, it's been, so the last time I had a relapse was in 2007.
Oh, 2000. Wow.
Yeah, so it's been quite some time. So about 15 years, almost 16 years now. So,
and I'm assuming you've had illnesses, the flu, maybe even COVID.
Oh yeah. I've had COVID twice.
And it didn't put you down. That is incredible.
Yeah. And so when I had COVID the second time, it created, and so I've never had shingles before in my life. I did have the shingles vaccine as a young person, as many of us do.
Okay, right.
And I had a shingles outbreak on my glute, on my butt. And I think that that's where I had the shot when I had the shingles vaccine.
I bet you're right.
And it went away after, you know, a month or so. And you know, knock on wood, I haven't had any other issues since then.
Wow.
But I've been treating people, you know, a lot of people with post-COVID and things like that. And, you know, and we see this a lot. We're seeing a lot of Epstein-Barr reactivations. And I've mentioned that already.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No. And I've talked to a lot of Lyme people that, you know, have been good for years and COVID will bring it out. COVID is just, but I think when that happens, I think you either didn't get to the root of the problem or you didn't completely eradicate it.
That's correct. So what's happened is they've pushed it into latency.
Yes.
And it stayed in latency. And this happens, you know, all the time with herpes, right?
Right.
Herpes simplex one on the lip, or genital herpes, herpes simplex two. You know, to the best of our understanding is that most people will never completely clear that virus. But when the immune system is strong, we would say the immune system is patent, it can keep a lid on that virus so that it never comes out. But it's when we become weakened through stress, through poor nutrition, poor sleep, whatever it might be, another infection, and then it comes out.
Yes, exactly.
Because the lid comes off, yeah?
Exactly. What an incredible story. Truly, you have an incredible journey, lots of learning, and truly, I love the whole tobacco thing. Like, it just makes sense to me, you know, give your body something bad to open something up. So is there anything today that you continue to do regularly other than just normal supplements or Chinese medicine in your case that, you know, just kind of keeps your body healthy? I'm assuming you still have a clean diet, you know, just try to live a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, a big part of my healing after all the infection was cleared is that I had lost a lot of weight and I was still having some digestive issues. And, you know, Chinese medicine is great for a lot of things. But in a lot of ways, Chinese medicine can put a Band-Aid on the digestive issues.
Okay.
And so
didn't
really
know that. Okay.
I mean, we can use herbs just like we would use drugs. And this is true in functional medicine a lot. And I love functional medicine, But one of my criticisms of functional medicine at large is that it can be very similar to allopathic medicine in that there's a pill for every ill, and we can use an herb or a supplement to mask the symptoms just like we would use a drug. And I'll give you an example of that is, you know, I work with some patients with mast cell activation symptoms, syndrome. And there are a lot of Lyme sufferers that have MCAS.
Yes.
And we can give people enzymes, and we use diamine oxidase, which is the enzyme naturally that the body produces that breaks down histamine. And so we can megadose somebody on DAO and bring their histamine levels down. But are we really getting at the root of the problem? And I would say no. We're in that case using a supplement as a Band-Aid. And so so when I started my sort of regeneration protocol, I would say that began in about 2008 when I moved back to Colorado, which is my home state. And so I really started getting into health and fitness. And I had been familiar with the paleo diet at that point, but I wasn't fully committed to it. And at that point, I was reading, you know, literature on it. I've always been really fascinated with the medical literature. I read, you know, 2 or 3 journal articles a day, typically, and sometimes wow. many more. I really enjoy reading the medical literature. And that was a habit that started when I had Lyme disease.
Okay.
So, I'm always on PubMed. I have lots of ways to get journal articles. I have lots of friends who are, you know, they have connections to medical libraries.
That's awesome.
Different ways to get them. So, you know, using the paleo diet, I got rid of gluten. I got rid of dairy for a long time. I got rid of legumes, refined sugar, seed oils. And that really helped me to regenerate my gut. And today I follow a pretty strict diet in that way. I'm still very, very oriented around the paleo primal diet. I can eat some dairy now. I can have a little bit of permission or a little bit of freedom within that. You know, a bite of gluten won't hurt me. I might notice that my digestion slows
right.
down. You know, I can have a little bit of birthday cake at a birthday party and be okay.
Right.
But it's taken years of really working on my digestion in that way, because as a child, I had a lot of antibiotics, and I really believe that was a part of what set me up. It was the, you know, childhood nutrition. I ate lots of junk food as a kid. I was a sugar junkie like you wouldn't believe. Right. And as a undergrad, I started to figure out, okay, refined sugar is not so good. I need to, you know, cut down. But I didn't really get stringent about it until during and after the Lyme disease experience.
Yeah, boy, it sure does teach us a lot. I mean, I thought I ate, you know, when I was a kid, I did. I ate junk food. We my family was a baseball family. We lived out at the ball field Monday through Friday. So we ate hot dogs at the snack bar, or we had, you know, drive-through fast food. Like, that was just kind of our summer lifestyle.
Oh gosh, I can relate.
Yeah. And completely. So, you know, as I get into my 20s, I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to the gym and I'm being healthy and having a good diet. But boy, you just learn so much more than you thought you already knew when you go through a journey like Lyme. It just, it really, if you're in it to win it, obviously we were, you really focus on really diving deep into what it is, what do I need to do? And that, you know, diet is such a hard piece for a lot of people that are battling Lyme. And what I like to tell them is that don't look at what you can't eat right now. You know, focus on getting better, killing off, you know, building back up your body. And then you can always start trying to work it back into your diet. It may or may not work for you, but don't like look at it as in somebody's taking something away from you, you know, because I dealt with mercury poisoning. That was one of the first diagnoses I got before they figured out it was Lyme. And I was a seafood junkie. I mean, I ate seafood probably 5 nights a week, and they told me I couldn't have seafood. And I thought it was the end of the world. But I just remember telling my head, it's not forever, Tanya. You can do this. You just want to get healthy. You want to build it. But it is important to have a lifestyle change when you get this illness. And if you want to stay healthy, not just from Lyme, but just from anything in general, you know, you've got to have a lifestyle change. And a lifestyle change, once you get it down, it's your new normal. So it's normal. It's not hard. It's not difficult. But diet plays such a huge role in our healing process. And I think that we talk about that a lot on our show because people don't want to admit that. They don't think, you know, I remember growing up, I was going to turn into a chicken nugget. You know, that's all I ever wanted was chicken nuggets. It really is. We are what we eat. Like we kind of are. So, yeah.
I would have been a box of ice cream and or a pizza as a young person. So I have a little perspective I'd love to share on this.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned the paleo diet and, you know, I'm a very scientific minded person. You know, I have also a very spiritual side. I really appreciate modern science greatly, you know, and an area of modern science that's really influenced me. And it really came out of the paleo diet movement. And I need to give them all the credit because they really got me thinking in a different time cycle. Because what we know through the study of anthropology is that humans are a very old species. You know, the oldest physical anthropology evidence is that anatomically modern humans, meaning we look just like we look now, 300,000 years old, these remains that were found in Morocco. And yes, we've evolved since then. We evolved in that 300,000 years, we evolved dairy tolerance. We evolved lighter skin. We evolved blue eyes, right? So evolution has still proceeded, but yet our basic hardware of digestion and our immune system, which is largely located in our gut, right? 60 or 70% of our immune system lives in our gut. That all came from the hunter-gatherer era and modern farming, even just farming in general, is at the oldest now, the oldest we can find is about 13,000 years old, and that was spotty. Really about 10,000 years old, we started farming at scale. And really it didn't become prevalent until about 2,000 years ago. And then we look at, industrial fertilizers, diesel-powered tractors, that's only, you know, 100 years old.
Right.
And so where I'm going with all this is that our genes evolved to thrive in an environment where we were eating the food we got from our environment. There was no grocery store. We did not have a safe food system. Mm-hmm. We went through periods of famine. We went through seasonality where there were no, you know, carbohydrates or fruit available for a big portion of the year in the northern latitudes, which is another part of the conversation is where you're from in the world dictates something about how your genes respond to food. Because if you're from an equatorial environment, food is just ambient in the environment year round. You can walk through the rainforest. If you know what you're doing in the rainforest, you can eat this fruit and that root. And there's fish over here. And there's, you know, there's all these animals. Whereas the further north you go, the less those foodstuffs are available and the more humans relied upon hunting and hunting large animals. And so by the time you get up to the Arctic Circle and you're talking about the Inuit and the Laplander people and the Siberians, you know, they're surviving on, you know, whale meat and seal blubber, you know, for large portions of the year. And so where I'm going with this is that one of the things that really has helped me understand health and really generate deep health in myself and now in my clients now for almost 20 years is understanding the genetic and inherited evolutionary basis for health. And that comes down to eating a species appropriate diet. And so that means, you know, knowing where your ancestors come from, at least generally speaking.
Yeah, right.
And eating in a way that respects that tradition. Because that's what our bodies know on a genetic level to create health and vitality.
Interesting. I that never would have crossed my mind, actually. But it makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So that's great. You know, what I do with my patients, and I'm not working with a ton of Lyme disease patients, and I'll get into that if you want to talk about that, because I was afraid of it. I have a very healthy respect for Lyme disease, and I have worked with a few dozen Lyme disease patients over the year, and more now than I ever have before.
It's a complex disease. I mean, it really is. It's not just, you know, the Borrelia, the Lyme, the spirochetes. It's the mold, the parasites. Sure. Like there's so many levels to it on top of the co-infections. So mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot, and everybody's body responds differently. So absolutely. You know, I do just like what Dr. K does in his practice. Like I just value him so much because, you know, he puts his license on the line every day because he wants to treat it, you know, naturally, holistically, and mm-hmm. it's a tough. tough disease to have and then to treat, sure. You know?
Absolutely.
So
all the above.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had my share of treatment successes and treatment failures for sure. And so really something that I've really been a lot more adamant about in the last few years is working on the gut first and foremost, really almost with any chronic disease, because what's happening is that people come into the chronic illness space from a background of all the industrial foods. They're all eating, you know, even if they think they eat well, everybody walks into my office, most of them say that they eat healthy, but we all have different conceptualizations of what that means.
Well, and I learned that being sick. Like, I'm like, mm-hmm. I thought this was healthy. No, not exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So everybody comes in, even if they didn't, you know, almost no one has an experience of eating super healthy all the way through from childhood to the adulthood when they get a chronic illness. Most people go through some period of young adulthood, eating fast food.
Yeah, nobody's that good, right?
Right. Exactly.
Nobody's that good.
It's very rare. It's very,
very
rare.
Right.
And so we're all coming into this space with a gut microbiome that's been thrown off by years of eating industrial food that we didn't evolve eating. And, you know, our food is so sterile. You know, this is another thing that really helped me a lot was really getting into fermented foods. And not everyone could have them. For example, people with MCAS, which we mentioned earlier.
Right.
But nonetheless, when people can tolerate them, fermented foods do such a powerful service to the body in repopulating the gut biome and helping the lining of the gut to heal. And from my perspective and what I've learned over all the years is that if you focus on the gut, if you don't do anything else, you're going to get at least halfway there just by making sure your digestion is dialed.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I, you know, if I meet somebody, for example, in, you know, in your situation, when you were in grad school and, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, I tell people if you're not ready to treat, if you can't treat, if you're not going to treat, if there's two things that you can do, and I tell them it's their diet, and I tell them to take binders, because mm-hmm. whether you have Lyme or not, mm-hmm. the environment has so many toxins and we're so yeah. much more susceptible to hanging on to them because of our Lyme disease. So diet is just such a huge thing. And I think so, you know, because the majority of our immune system, it comes right from our gut. So mm-hmm. you got to work on your gut, you know, and that's just another reason why I steer clear, and I'm glad I didn't do the antibiotic route because, you know, yeah. then you're just, now you have to go back in and fix your gut, you know,
yeah,
it's like, we already have one problem. We're just adding another yeah. problem to it. So.
Well, and you know, to be fair, the antibiotic herbs, you know, in Chinese medicine, we classify most of those herbs that are antibiotic in nature. We call them cold and downward draining. And that is because they can cause on their own, if they're taken by themselves, they can cause the exact same side effects that an antibiotic drug can, which is typically loose stool. And that's because it's killing your gut microbiome. And it just makes sense. The plants, so here's the evolutionary perspective is so valuable. There was a Russian biologist who said, nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution. And the plants that are coming from Chinese medicine and any other tradition for that matter, the plants create antimicrobial substances because they themselves are fighting off bacteria in their environment. They're just trying to survive. So when you look at the antimicrobial herbs, they come from the swamp often,
okay.
right? Or they come from these harsh environments where they need to create these very strong alkaloid molecules that we think of as antimicrobials. That's just so that they can survive in their environment. And so they're, you know, just as much of a nuclear bomb, maybe not just as much, but still very, very strongly a nuclear bomb for the gut microbiome as a regular antibiotic. The only difference is that we evolved with these substances and similar substances, so we have the ability to detoxify from them. And that's, again, the evolutionary perspective, all of these modern molecules, you know, modern chemistry is not that old. And right. we have produced, as a species, we produced hundreds of thousands of molecules, but most those are almost all came in the last 200 years. And most of them even came from since the 1960s. And they're so new that our bodies don't know how to detoxify them. When you talk about, you know, glyphosate, our genes never saw glyphosate for hundreds of millions of years. There was no glyphosate in the environment till what, 1960 or 70, whenever glyphosate was invented?
Right, right.
So natural antibiotics have a little better ability or a lot better ability to be detoxified by the body, but they still can harm the gut. So we still need to support digestion through all these other means, through other herbs, yes, through dietary practices, you know, warming foods, lots of ginger, lots of broths, you know, lots of fermented foods.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gosh, well, and I even learned so much from you. So I just love doing these podcasts. They're you know, for the listeners out there, some people are just starting their journey. Some people are at the middle of their journey. Some people might even think their journey's over and they had, you know, a backfall. So I just think that listening to different people's stories and different perspectives and then getting a wealth of information from guests like you, it's just incredible. So I truly can't thank you enough for taking the time to share with us. I'm over the moon excited that you are absolutely, you've beat this without a shadow of a doubt. We know that because we've tried the tobacco. You're good.
That's right.
So I really appreciate you taking the time to share your journey. And for the people that are out there, we will on the title to your podcast, we'll go ahead and drop the links so people can reach out to you if they want more information or where to find your clinic at.
Tanya, thank you so much. It's been really an honor and a delight to spend some time with you this evening to talk about Lyme disease. And you're such a wonderful host.
Oh, thank you so much. Take care.
You too. Bye now.
The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.